I'm Kurt Anderson in Studio 360. Today, looking at how trains have influenced art in the 20th century and now in the 21st. We invited WNYC's John Schaefer to come into Studio 360 to talk with us about music that's been inspired by that characteristic rhythm of the rails and the wail of the train whistle.
Good morning, America, how are you? Say, don't you know me? I'm your native son. I'm a train they call the City of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done.
Well, that was, of course, the great Johnny Cash singing the City of New Orleans. There is clearly a great folk country tradition in writing about trains.
Well, there is, and, you know, there's certainly musical, logical reasons for that, but there's also just social reasons. I mean, trains were the information superhighway. It's how people and goods and information got moved in the 19th century. So naturally, as people moved and they took their songs with them, trains became increasingly an important part of that.
What is it about the sounds of trains themselves, which we'll get to a little later about how they are worked into music, the sort of loneliness of the train whistle in the distance? Was that something that struck people in 1910 and 1940 as mournful, or is that something that now in our postmodern modernity we look at differently?
Well, I think it was an evocative sound from the get-go. First of all, the train whistle is not a single tone. It's a chord. It's at least two different tones. And as we'll hear, there are classical composers who've attempted to use orchestral instruments to imitate the sound of the train whistle. In fact, the Swiss composer Artur Onegger, his most famous work is probably this piece we're going to hear next, which is called Pacifica 231. Like the Johnny Cash song that we heard, that is the name of a famous locomotive.
And this piece is from when?
This is from 1923. Onegger was active in the 30s and 40s, and like many Europeans, sort of looked curiously and perhaps a little enviously at the wide open spaces of the American West and the idea of a locomotive picking up speed and starting on that long trek is something that's very clearly delineated through orchestral instruments. Now this, you know, this is a guy doing an abstract musical picture of a locomotive, but there's no mistaking what he's trying to portray here. Now, strikingly enough, it took 20 more years before anybody actually thought of bringing the sounds themselves into the concert hall. And that happened after the Second World War in Paris, where there were a couple of composers, including one named Pierre Schaeffer. Schaeffer is one of the co-founders of a style called musique concrète, concrete music. It's not abstract anymore. It's now a real, live, concrete object that you will recognize.
And they used various sounds taken from reality and made, transmuted them into music.
And that's really all they did. I mean, this piece is called Étude au chemin de fer, Study on a Railroad, and it's simply the sounds of a locomotive. They're cut together and spliced together in a way that today's DJs in the dance clubs would certainly understand.
When does the guitar start? So 20 years before Andy Warhol was putting up a stack of Brillo boxes and calling it art, this movement was pulling out sounds of a locomotive and calling it music, I guess.
Right. I mean, there's a subtle difference between these last two pieces. Onegger in the 1920s was asking his audience to hear the musical possibilities of a locomotive. Pierre Schaeffer in this piece was asking his audience to hear the music of a locomotive, to hear those sounds as a genuinely musical experience.
So the Schaeffer piece was in the late 40s. That certainly was a moment at which the centrality of the train in American life was on the wane. Did train influence music go somewhere after that?
Well, you have to wait a few more decades to see real obvious evidence of what Schaffer and the other concrete music composers were doing, you know, sort of reappearing, but it does reappear. And it reappears in a very dramatic form in a piece by the American composer Steve Reich called Different Trains, which really brings this idea that we just heard of the train sounds on tape and combines it with the sounds of sampled train whistles to create a piece that, like any great work of art, transforms something deeply personal into something kind of universal. Steve Reich is a Jewish American composer growing up in the early 1940s with one parent in New York and the other in Los Angeles, would take a train from coast to coast. And later in life, thinking back on it, realized that as a Jewish boy, he would have been riding a very different train if he had been living in Europe at the same time. So what he does is to set up this juxtaposition of train sounds, both real and sort of imitated through a series of string quartet recordings, and some recordings of people who worked as Pullman porters or Holocaust survivors. And it's interesting to juxtapose the sound, especially of the train whistles. We'll hear first the American train. This is Reich sort of reimagining his youth, riding these trains and taking a romantic ride from New York to Chicago to Los Angeles. All right, so there you have the actual sound of the train and its whistle. Now, American train whistles tend to be a very euphonious, a very harmonious sound, just speaking in terms of the notes that make up the chord of a train whistle. When you get to European trains, it's a very different thing. They choose notes that have almost a wailing, shrieking sound. And this isn't Reich using hindsight. This is actually the way European train whistles sound. When you get to the second part of this piece, Different Trains, it's now looking back at the Holocaust, and the train sounds are dramatically different here. So you can hear, as I say, a drastic difference just in the sound of the train whistles between the American and the European trains put to a very effective musical use in this piece.
So all of those sounds in both of those pieces, both from America and Europe, were sampled sounds from actual trains.
From actual trains, yes. Now, sampling has grown in the 15 or 16 years since Steve Reich made this piece. And the idea of taking actual train sounds and sampling them has now migrated into the pop world as well. And in fact, the most recent piece that we have is something that has just come out from the elfin Icelandic pop star Björk. And this is actually from a soundtrack to the movie Dancer in the Dark. And this basically, as you'll hear, is a pop song with the rhythm track created by a locomotive.
I've seen it all. I have seen the trees. I have seen the willow leaves.
That's actually quite wonderful, isn't it?
It really is just a very effective use of a sampled sound as a rhythm track. And it doesn't need to be reinforced with strings or drums or anything else. It's a great rhythm track in and of itself.
Well, if you don't mind, I like that so much. Let's listen to a little more of it. And thank you for joining us today in Studio 360, John Schaefer.
My pleasure, Kurt. Thank you.
You haven't seen elephants, kings, or Peru.
I'm happy to say I had better to do.
If you'd like to find out more about the music that John Schaefer and I talked about, visit our website at studio360.org.
Are great if the roof doesn't fall.
I'm Kurt Anderson, talking today about trains with the author and train brakeman and switchman, Linda Niemann.